Blog Talk Radio.
Voice about their company as we do here at EAL Radio Show. We bring you live talk with former employees, interviews with leading aviation authors, interviews with former and current presidents of Eastern, airline humor, serious airline real life drama as told by former Eastern people, projects such as First Flight to introduce the new company back into the air, and much, much more. And it's been a trip for us here at the radio station. Let's introduce our host for tonight's show. Neil, who do you see on the producer's board?
Well, I see on the producer's board several people that I've been trying to identify their area codes, but two of them are right here in our studio. I've got Steve Thompson. Let's start off with Steve Thompson. He's right here next to me. I can actually see him. And in radio, as you know, you don't see people. You just hear people. Steve, my golly, you're as ugly as I thought you were. But you're senior to me, so therefore you can't, take my leg on this flight. So go ahead, Steve. How's everything with you?
Hi, Neil. Hi, listeners. And welcome to Ponte Vedra Park, Florida, where we find a beautiful sunset and a full moon rising. The same thing is happening in Roaring Gap, except it's about 40 degrees colder and about 40 knots of wind more blowing. Glad to be here.
Steve, thanks so much. And I see also, radio seeing that is, Chuck Albright down in Ocala, Florida. And Chuck, how are things there in the villages?
We're doing a little rainy today, but the folks did get out on those 52 golf courses that we have. Looks like we're your snowbirds when you brought the cold weather with us. So I tend to get a little nasal here. I have a cold, so I guess it looks like it's going to be shiny, sunny here for the rest of the week. So maybe I can get out and play some golf. Back to you.
Okay, let's travel down, let's see, let's go South Florida. And down in South Florida, we have two of our hosts there. We have Cecile Intriago. Cecile, hello. How are you? What's happening in your area?
Hi, I'm great, and it's a beautiful 73 degrees, clear, and it's absolutely a gorgeous day. Back to you, Neil.
Okay, right next to you is Jim Hart. Hello, Jim. How are you?
Hi, Neil. Hey, let me tell you, I used my outside shower today. It was 80 degrees, and I wait until it's about that warm. And of course, the reason I do that is I don't have to wash the walls down in the inside shower. How about that? Back to you, Neil.
Yeah, how about that? God, we're having fun tonight, aren't we? Gee whiz. Okay, let's travel north. Let's go up to, oh, my God, the snow country, the snowbirds. And who do we have in the snowbird territory? We have none other than, we'll come back to you, Cecile. No, we did, Cecile. We're going to go and talk to George Jen, living out there in Long Island. Hello, George.
Hello, Neil. Good evening. It was quite a day here, which I spent most of it
shoveling snow. And when I got finished shoveling it, we were only supposed to get like a couple of inches of snow. We wound up getting 10 inches of snow. So I had to go out and shovel it again. And now I have to go out and shovel it again once the show is over. So, back to you, Neil.
Wow. I don't know.
Come on down, George.
I don't know
why. I'm thinking about it, believe me.
Hey, I got a real estate company, and Cecile has a real estate company. We can find you something here, right, Cecile?
Well, I don't need that, Neil. My sister has a place in Cocoa Beach, which is vacant. It's fully furnished, and she told me I could use it for as long as I want. So,
oh,
I guess my wife could. Yeah, so I think I'm going to be headed down that way soon.
Okay.
That's
real estate. That's the best.
Right. Okay, let's see. Let's travel up to North Carolina. And since we have two of our hosts in that area, and I'm looking at one of our hosts, Steve Thompson, we have also Jill Cotton. Jill, hello, and where are you, and what's happening there?
Hi, Neil. I'm glad to be here tonight. Well, we've had a really nice day here today. Our high was 47 degrees, and that was at 7 a.m. this morning. And
I think Hey, Jill, Steve just looked at me, and he says he's glad he's in Florida.
Well, I know he's a snowbird now. Anyway, back to you, Neil.
Okay, very good. Frank, are you with us tonight? Frank Segnor in Long Island? Okay, let's go to Atlanta, Georgia. We have Jim Graybill there. Hello, Jim, if I've not cut
Neil.
Your microphone off. Hello, what's happening in Atlanta?
Hey, Neil, how you all? It's not a bad day. It's a little chilly. It's overcast down here right now. I got right at 32 degrees. I tell you, I heard something the other day about this guy was thinking about moving south, and he loaded up his pickup truck, and he put his snow shovel in the back of it. And the guy trucking down the road, and somebody asked him how far south he was going, and he said, well, I'll tell you, the first person to ask me what this snow shovel is for, that's where I'm going to stop.
I like that.
Get on, Neil.
Very good. Very good, Jim.
Okay. Neil, how about John Ruth up in Philadelphia?
Is John with us tonight? No, I don't see John with us. Gay, are you with us in Hilton Head? Hello, Gay.
Yes, I am. I'm in Hilton Head. It's beautiful. 51 degrees here. We don't need to go here at all. Thank goodness. Nice, pretty warm day here.
Okay. Golly, I think we've checked in with everybody. Golly, this whole show is nothing but introducing hosts. I guess that's all, folks.
Look at all the fun we're having.
Yeah, we're having a lot of fun.
On with the program.
That's the good thing about kitchen table radio. But we do have to come back to Bill Joseph. Golly, Bill. Nice having you with us, and tell us where you are and what's happening where you are.
Hi, Neil. I'm over here on the Nature Coast, the west coast of Florida, just above Tampa. We had a storm front go through here in the morning, and it rained most of the morning. Our temperatures dropped down. We're expecting an overnight low in the 40s and back up to 67 tomorrow. Back to you, Neil.
Okay. Bill, that takes care of all of our hosts, and unless you are a host that we don't know about. Would you please say hello to us?
Well, let me remind our listeners that if they have listened to our past shows, you know that we can be reached online during our live broadcast. Our numbers are, once again, 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. Let me repeat those numbers. 213-816-1611 or toll free at 877-572-1861. Remember, when calling the show, make sure you press the number one button on your phone if you wish to connect live with our show. Neil?
Okay. Bill, thanks so much. And we do have, you know, as a producer here, we call ourselves Kitchen Table Radio, and that's basically what it is. But we talk about Eastern, and that's the main object, objective, I guess, in our broadcast now, 202 episodes that we have shared with those that want to listen to us. Not everyone wants to listen to us because we, you know, we're not as professional as some of the radio shows that you listen to on your car radio. We're internet-based, and so we just kind of struggle along here to try to give you things that's happening in Eastern Airlines and about people with Eastern. And so, Bill, just as a reminder to our listeners, you can tune us in by going to www.ealradioshow.com. You don't even have to add the www. I hate to kind of say www. I don't know how many W's to stop at. You know, 1, 2, 3, www. But just put in your browser ealradioshow.com, and by golly, our website will come up, and there you will see a little radio symbol there on the left-hand side. You'll see two of them, one on the left and one on the right, but this radio show is the English version of what we do tonight, and we were hoping that we had a Spanish version, but no one that would come forward and say, hey, I'd like to do the Spanish version of what you guys do. So we're asking anyone that has a speaking command of the Spanish language to step forward and say, hey, I want to be the Spanish host of EAL Radio Latino. And
Lucille,
you're hired.
Has got
you're not
going to
make any money, but you're hired. You're hired. Also, you can, excuse me, Jim, but you can also go to the Retired Eastern Pilots Association's website, and you can click there. The reason I say the Retired Eastern Pilots Association is because they are generous enough to sponsor our show, and so we're happy to have them as a sponsor. So they have on their website, and their website is REPA Online, REPAONLIN.com, REPAONLINE.com. And there you can see the same little radio icon, and you can click that arrow, and you can join our show, be on our show, and hope that you can enjoy listening to us. And that's all I have. Bill, back to you.
All right, Neil, let's start the engine for our show.
Clear.
Well, Neil, what's our show about tonight?
Well, first of all, Steve would like to make a comment. He's got the microphone right in his hand, and he doesn't like the sound of that radial engine, which I think is our R2800, our 3350, or 60, or 70. I could never get those 33s and 43s. But Steve, what have you got to say about that start?
Well, if you look at the exhaust, the flame that's coming out of it is completely red. And I think Chuck has been working on this engine on areas that maybe he's not qualified to work on. But that exhaust is awful.
You know, there was a hesitation before the engine started. You know, that wasn't a mechanic's problem. That was the pilot's problem. As far as the yellow flame goes, it's better to have a yellow flame than no flame at all.
Hey, Chuck, we break them, you fix them.
There you go. There you go. Very good. You guys are getting pretty good, you know. You ought to go professional.
There you go.
As one guy, I used to tell Steve Thompson, I mean, not Steve Thompson, but we used to have a captain, Stu Gleason, in Atlanta, Georgia. And a lot of people listening remember Stu Gleason, a captain. And I'll never forget flying co-pilot with Stu down to San Juan, Puerto Rico, and after passengers were deplaning, Stu was standing there at the door thanking people for flying Eastern Airlines, and one of the passengers said to Stu, "Captain, you ought to be on stage." And the stagecoach leaves in about 15 minutes. So, basically, that's what we got tonight. But you guys are getting pretty good. You're getting really professional. But let's
and
have
that's
fun.
Without
let's,
a script.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go with the show. Most Bill, to answer your question, mostly Eastern stuff is what we're going to talk about tonight. We like to talk about Eastern, keeping our family informed and reminding of its rich history. Tonight we have a special request in remembrance of the tragic crash of Eastern Flight 663, and it will be coming up on the 50th anniversary, February 8th, of that flight. We did a piece on our show about, I guess it's about 2 years ago, about that that tragic accident that happened. And but since we were reminded this month is the 50th anniversary, we thought we would give another brief synopsis of that tragic crash. If we have time, we will have a reading of the Great Eastern story that appeared in the 1978 issue of the Repartee, then simply call a newsletter, but now it's called Repartee, which is the official magazine of the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. We've had a small taste of humor along with breaking news. And, Steve, how about bringing us, would you give us the background of Flight 663?
Sure, Neil. And Eastern Airlines Flight 663 was a scheduled domestic passenger flight from Boston to Atlanta, then scheduled stopovers in John F. Kennedy International Airport, New York, Richmond, Virginia, Charlotte, North Carolina, Greenville, South Carolina. And on the night of February 8, 1965, the aircraft serving the flight, a DC-7, crashed near Jones Beach State Park, New York, just after taking off from JFK Airport. All 79 passengers and 5 crew aboard perished. National Transportation, NTSB, and Civil Aeronautics Board investigations determined that evasive maneuvers undertaken by Flight 663 to avoid an oncoming Pan Am Boeing 707 caused the pilot to suffer spatial disorientation and lose control of the aircraft. The accident remains the third worst accident involving a Douglas DC-7. The Douglas DC-7 serving Flight 663 made its first flight in 1958 and had subsequently accumulated a total of 18,500 hours of flight time. It was piloted by Captain Frederick R. Carson, 41, who had been employed by Eastern Airlines for 19 years and had accumulated 12,607 hours of flight time. His co-pilot, First Officer Edward R. Dunn, 41, a 9-year veteran of Eastern Airlines, had 8,550 hours of flight time. The flight engineer was Douglas C. Mitchell, 24, with 2 years employment and 407 pilot hours and 141 hours of flight engineer time. All had passed proficiency checks with the DC-7 aircraft. The two flight attendants aboard were Linda Lord and Judith Durkin. The flight from Logan International Airport in Boston to John F. Kennedy proceeded normally. Flight 663 departed JFK at 6:20 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on an IFR flight clearance to Byrd Field, now which is Richmond International Airport, Richmond, Virginia. Well, the takeoff proceeded normally, and the airport control tower prepared to hand over control to the New York Air Route Traffic Control, ARTCC, on Long Island, noting that Flight 663 was executing a Dutch 7 departure which was a routine takeoff procedure that required a series of turns over the Atlantic Ocean in order to avoid flying over New York City. The New York ARTCC responded with the information that Pan American Airways Flight 212, a Boeing 707, was descending to 4,000 feet in the same airspace.
The radio conversation between the New York Air Traffic Control Center and the JFK Control Tower went like this. Jim?
All right. At 3 miles north of Dutch is Clipper 212, descending at 4,000.
How does he shape up? With that boy coming in, the guy is at 1 o'clock position, right? Where about him?
Though the control tower responded that Eastern Flight 663 was at a higher altitude than Pan Am Flight 212, it was, in fact, lower. Subsequently, the control tower radioed the Pan Am flight that there was traffic at 11 o'clock, 6 miles away, traveling southeast of their position, climbing above 3,000 feet. Pan Am 212 acknowledged. ATC then radioed flight 663, a similar advisory, with traffic at 2 o'clock, 5 miles away, traveling below 663's position. In reality, the traffic, Pan Am 212, was above Eastern Flight 663, descending from 5,000 feet. Captain Carson acknowledged that he saw the traffic, that he was beginning to turn into the Dutch 7 departure, and signed off by saying good night.
The control tower traffic says that at 11 o'clock, 6 miles, southeast bound, just climbing out of 3,000 feet. We have traffic. Traffic at 2 o'clock, 5 miles, northeast bound. Hello to you, Eastern.
Okay, we have the traffic turning 170663. Good night.
Good night, sir.
Flight 663's radioed good night at 6:25 p.m. was the last transmission received from the doomed flight. The night of February 8th was dark, with no visible moon or stars and no visible horizon. As the two airliners approached similar positions, their pilots had no point of reference with which to determine actual separation distance or position. Eastern Flight 663 departure turn and Pan Am's subsequent left turn into its assigned heading had placed the two aircraft on the illusion of a direct collision course. The Boeing rolled right and initiated a descent in attempt to avoid the collision. In response, Eastern 663 initiated an extreme right turn in order to pass safely. The captain of Pan Am 212 later estimated that the two aircraft had passed between 200 and 500 feet of each other, while the first officer estimated the distance was only 200 to 300 feet. Chuck?
Flight 663 was unable to recover from its unusual steep bank and plunged into the icy waters of the Atlantic Ocean, where it exploded with a bright orange flame. The Pan Am 707 was the first to relay the news of the crash as it was receiving permission to land. Air Canada Flight 627, which had departed a few minutes prior to Flight 663, also radioed news of the explosion in the water.
Radio conversation between the JFK control tower and Pan Am Flight 212 and the Air Canada Flight 627. Okay, we had a near miss. We're turning now to 360 and... Did you have another target in this area at the same spot? We're here in just a minute ago.
Affirmative, however, not on my scope at present time.
Is he still on the scope?
No, sir.
Neil.
Well, it looks like he's in the bay then, because we saw him. He looked like he winged over to miss us, and we tried to avoid. And we saw a bright flash about 1 minute later. He was well over the top of us, and it looked like he went into an absolute vertical turn and kept rolling.
There's a big fire going on down there in the water. I hear about 2 o'clock position. Right now, I don't know what it is. It looked like a big explosion.
After the initial explosion, the wrecked aircraft sank to the bottom in 75 feet of water. Numerous air crews, including Pan Am 212, Air Canada 627, and Braniff Airlines Flight 5, radioed ATC in the area with news of an explosion. The aircraft broke up upon impact and was destroyed. All 5 crew members and 79 passengers died on impact. Neil?
Well, the 15 ships accompanied by 11 helicopters and numerous rescue divers converged on the scene of the crash in hopes of rendering aid to survivors. 2 hours after impact, debris began floating up to the surface. By sunrise, 7 bodies had been recovered. 3 more were recovered in the course of the following 3 days. In locating the wreckage, the United States Navy provided underwater sonar to assist with the operation. 13 Coast Guard vessels helped searching the shores of Long Island and provided salvage efforts. Rescue workers and volunteers scoured 40 miles of beaches collecting debris that washed ashore. The Civil Aeronautics Board, the CAB as it was called, investigated the accident. The DC-7 was not required to be equipped with a flight recorder, which would have automatically recorded the pilot's every control input. Thus, the CAB was forced to rely on witness testimony, radio recordings, and a best guess based on experience. Nevertheless, the CAB determined that the evasive maneuvers taken by the pilot of Eastern Flight 663 in order to avoid the oncoming Pan Am jet caused spatial disorientation, and the disorientation coupled with the extreme maneuver made it impossible for the pilot to recover from the roll in the few seconds remaining before the DC-7 crashed into the Atlantic Ocean. The CAB also determined that Captain Carson had neither the time nor adequate information to assess Flight 663's position relative to Pan Am 212. And given the illusion of a collision course, he had acted appropriately in initiating evasive maneuvers. The CAB made no recommendations in the final accident report, although early news reports reported the near miss of Flight 663 and 212. The FAA denied that there was ever any danger of collision. At that time, the crash of Flight 663 was the 5th worst air aviation accident to have occurred in the United States. It was and remains the 3rd deadliest crash of a DC-7 after Caledonian Airways Flight 153 and Northwest Airlines Flight 293. And it is the 25th deadliest single plane accident to have occurred in the United States. Folks, that's our message about the Eastern flight, the tragedy of Flight 663 that happened 50 years ago, February 8th, 6 days from now. We have that anniversary of that flight. Of course, there have been
Neil,
other...
this is Jim.
Yes,
how
Jim,
do you come up with all of this information so long after the event?
Well, you can get just about anything from a little bit of research, and most all of research now is conducted on the Internet. And the reason we did this show, Jim, I'm glad you asked about the research and all, it's available right on the internet. All you have to ask is for any particular aircraft accident that occurs that you want to know about, listener. All you have to do is go on the internet and type in or Google in the airplane, the airline, the aircraft flight number, if you can remember it, or if you want to ask about that particular flight and that accident. And usually there is enough information that you can garner from that you can, talk about it. And that's what we're doing tonight about that. But, you know, tonight after doing that story, Steve Thompson reminded me, and I remember because we did this show earlier. We did this show with several other Eastern accidents. We did this show, and Steve told us during that earlier broadcast of this particular incident that he was a passenger. I believe, if that's not correct, he was a passenger that was supposed to have been on that flight. Right, Steve?
That's correct, Neil. And this flight has special significance for Glenda, my wife, and myself and my family, because we were coming in from Mexico City to JFK on a flight to connect with this flight to Charlotte, where we lived and where I was based. And normally, a flight from the southwest to the northeast, such as this one, would encounter a 35 to maybe 50 knot average tailwind all the way. But on this particular day, it had a 35 to 50 knot headwind. And our two hour connect time, by the time we got to Kennedy, was now reduced to about an hour and a half. And this put us into the terminal area, into the customs area. At the time, all the European flights were coming in, and it was just absolutely jammed. But while we were waiting in customs area, Glenda, my wife, called my sister and said, we just got into Kennedy Airport, and we're going to be on this flight 663 from Kennedy to Charlotte. So then we went through customs, and that took probably 20, 30 minutes longer than it was normal. So we get through customs, and we go outside to get on the connecting bus around to the Eastern Terminal from the International Arrivals Building. So we get on the bus, and the first terminal we came to was TWA. Somebody had parked their car in the driveway, and the bus couldn't get around it. So we sat there for about 15 or 20 minutes until someone came around and moved the car. Now, by this time, it is almost departure time for Flight 663. So we get around to the terminal building at Eastern. We get to the gate just as we see 663 pulling away from the gate. The agent tells us that we can get a helicopter ride over to Newark, where a flight was leaving from Newark to Charlotte. So we get to Newark, and we check in there for the flight to Charlotte, and the agent says, well, it's a good thing you weren't on 663. And I said, why is that? He said, well, they went into the ocean, and everybody perished. Everybody died. And so we called my sister, who was with our children, and she was hysterical because she had heard over the flight, over the TV, that the flight had crashed into the ocean and everybody had perished. Now, she ended up believing we were on that flight. So we did, of course, call her again and tell her we're not on that flight. So this flight has a special significance to Glenda and me.
Steve, I have a question for you.
Wow. Yeah, George?
Yeah, Steve, what was your baggage on the doomed flight?
No, it was not. It was not on that flight. We were carrying it.
Oh, okay.
Because we had carried it through customs.
Any questions you'd like to ask Steve about that experience? because he's doing a book, Angel on My Shoulder or something like that, but My Guardian Angel, I think it is.
Right.
But, you know, this is absolutely... Ernest Gann wrote a book, and we've done an Ernest Gann book called Fate is a Hunter. And really it is. It really is. Truly is. And in this instance, two wonderful people are sitting here in front of me. They were also on the flight. Lynn? Oh, okay. But those people that are involved in the family were also. And so, you know, when someone perishes in a flight, someone leaves, then a lot of people are depending upon that person, and the families are involved. And so it's just a link all the way down, and so many people are affected by tragedy. Jill, did you have something to say?
I was going to say, I could imagine how upset you were with that car at PWA. And then in looking backwards, you say, somebody was looking out for us.
That's exactly right. That's what I thought at the time, and I uttered lots of four-letter words.
Oh,
but
I'm sure.
But then later on, I got on my knees and thanked God.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
It's
very
amazing. Go ahead.
Yeah.
It's
we've got our board. Excuse me, Jill.
Go
we've got our board lit up tonight. I mean, it is. I can't. Again, I'm scrolling up and down on this thing, and I have to cut some of the microphones off that appear on my producer's board here. And the reason I do that is because there are sound effects that filter through, and we can't filter. We're not a professional studio here. We're, like I say, we're a kitchen table radio station. And so, therefore, I have to do the best I can to filter those people that I suspect that might be carrying some background noise, conversations in the background. So if when I cut your speaker off, if you would like to make a comment, please just press 1 on your telephone keypad, and it will flash in front of me, and I can open your microphone up. And so, by golly, even though your microphone, you might be talking, and all of a sudden you're not getting a response. It's because your microphone has been turned off. So, a reminder: just press 1, and on the board, it will show that you want to join in our conversation and make a comment or add your comment to our conversation. But a very interesting information about Flight 663, and it's amazing how we're connected in so many ways with other folks that we've never met before. And but in a way, we're connected with just about the whole world, it seems like. And what do they say? Exponentially, you 8 people you talk with, and you're going to find somebody that you know, and they know you. You know some people that they know. So it's a small world, and it's getting smaller with the Internet. It really is getting smaller with the Internet. So... great story, and thanks so much for your testimony about what actually your experience was on that flight 663, Steve and Glenda. And thank God you're here.
Thank you.
Now, any comments from our listening audience? I'm going to open the microphones and see what kind of background noise we can have contributing to our little radio show tonight. Well, no one is talking, so therefore I open all microphones, so you don't even have to press 1. Anytime you want to sneeze or cough, we're going to hear it. And we'll either say, bless you, or whatever. But at any rate, we've got some more on our radio show tonight, and just a little bit more, we want to add the following. So listen up. it sounds like the sound of breaking news. Cecile, are you with
Las Vegas. Las Vegas. A Delta Airlines jet ended its flight from Minneapolis to Las Vegas on Thursday with its captain locked out of the cockpit. The airline said the pilot, who was not identified, left the cockpit prior to the final landing approach of Delta Flight 1651, but was not able to re-enter the flight deck because of a door jam. The airline said in a statement explaining the mishap. The first officer of the plane, which was carrying 160 passengers, took control and landed the aircraft safely at McCarran International Airport without further incident, the airline said. A commercial aircraft can be landed with one pilot at the control, and Delta pilots are fully trained to do so if the situation were to occur, Delta said in a statement. But the FAA spokesman, Ian Greger, said the agency declared an emergency for the Delta crew when the mishap occurred and would be investigating the incident. Delta said the cockpit door would be evaluated by airline maintenance technicians. This was reported by Cynthia Johnston in Las Vegas, writing an additional reporting by Steve Corman, editing by Lisa Shoemaker. Jill?
Since our lead story was about Eastern Flight 663 50 years ago, here is the breaking news for January 30th, 2015. A JetBlue Airbus jet nearly collided with another plane at a New York airport. This story is by Benjamin Zhang of the Business Insider. A JetBlue airliner was nearly involved in a mid-air collision with another aircraft near Westchester County Airport in New York last Sunday. Flight 94, an Airbus A320, was en route from Orlando, Florida, when air traffic controllers alerted its pilots of an unidentified small aircraft headed directly at them. And this is reported from the Hudson Valley News 12. According to the regional news channel, the JetBlue flight pilots were able to change course and narrowly avoided the collision. According to the AP, passengers on the Airbus claimed the small plane passed so close that they could hear its engines. The FAA is investigating. This latest incident comes from another near miss involving a JetBlue Airbus A320. Earlier this month, a JetBlue flight en route to Austin, Texas, had to abort takeoff and return to the gate at New York's JFK Airport after a landing Caribbean Airlines Boeing 737 crossed into its path. According to the news organization, the two airliners came within 2,800 feet of each other. In March 2014, a landing United Airlines jet with 155 passengers nearly collided with an express jet plane taking off from Newark Liberty International Airport. According to the LA Times, the two aircraft passed within 200 feet of each other when air traffic control ordered the United Airlines plane to abort landing and climb to a higher altitude.
I can pretend to have your attention for just a few moments. My ex-husband, my new boyfriend, and their divorce attorney are going to show you the safety features of the Boeing 737-800 series. It's been a long day for me. To properly fasten your seatbelt, slide the flat into the buckle. To release, lift up on the buckle. Position your seatbelt tight and lower across your hips like my grandmother wears her support bra. If you can land, you want to take your toys beyond home. There's 8 ways to get there. 2 forward exit doors, short wing window exits, 2 rear exit doors, signs overhead, disco lights on the floor, lead each exit. Everybody gets a door prize in the seat back pocket in front of you, along with dirty dappers, chewing gum wrappers, banana peels, and all the other gifts you leave for us. It's a safety information card. Take it out, check it out. You'll notice in the highly unlikely event that the captain lives near a hot tub, everybody gets their very own teeny-weeny yellow Southwest bikini. One size fits all. Take it out on lift shoulder and shoulder. Place it over your head. Wrap that strap around your waist. Buckle it in front and pull it tight. One side side, pull down on the red tab this way to manually inflate below the tube at your shoulder. Questions are coming by, hoping that you'll tell them how good-looking they are. They're going to make sure your seat backs and tray table are in their full upright next to the most impossible. And your carry-on items are crammed and shoved completely under the seat in front of you, leaving absolutely no room for your knees or feet. As you know, it's a no smoking, no whining, no complaining flight. It's a please and thank you, and you are such a good-looking flight attendant flight. Smoking is never allowed on board at Southwest. If you're not smoking, the lavatory is fine for that $2,000, and if you want to pay that for your airfare, you should have loaned somebody else. If we do make you that nervous the next hour and a half, you're more than welcome to step outside. We don't discriminate at Southwest. We have a special smoking section just for you. We'll even show you a movie tonight. We have Up in the Air. And the flight attendant serving you, her name is Wendy, and her motto is, if you can light it, you can smoke it. Come to long proof is tampering with disabling or destroying any smoke detector or webcam in either of our laboratories. Federal aviation regulation for our passenger compliance, the light of passenger information plans and passenger flaggers, basically, just do what we say and nobody gets hurt. And although we never anticipate a loss in cabin pressure, if we did, we certainly wouldn't be at work tonight. But if needed, throwing some acid off the compartment overhead. Stop screaming, let go of your neighbor, pull under that plastic tubing and fully extended, place the mask over your nose and mouth and breathe normally. To activate the flow of oxygen, simply insert 75 cents for the first minute and 50 cents for the first minute. Although that plastic bag may not inflate, you are receiving lots and lots of gin. Oxygen, that is. And if you're traveling with small children, we're sorry. If you're traveling with more than one child, pick out the one that you think might have the most earning potential down the road. And if you're traveling with somebody needing very special assistance, like your husband, or your wife, put on your mask first. That's it for the news and notes of show and tell. Sit back and relax, or you can sit up and be tense. Either way, that's all right. Game the clock's already ticking. Seriously, if there's anything at all that we can do to make your flight more enjoyable, please tell us. Just as soon as we land in Salt Lake City. And if there's anything you can do to make our flight more enjoyable, we'll tell you immediately. We're not flying Southwest. That's what we call very cheap entertainment. Nobody had to pay extra, but you certainly don't get a refund. That's Salt Lake City and Southwest. Welcome aboard. You can pretend
that's
to have your kids for just a few moments. My ex-husband, my new boyfriend, and their...
That's why Southwest Airlines was the highest earnings of all airlines last year, because they enjoy making passengers, not only getting them from point A to point B, but also making it a pleasant trip and a fun way to go. And they do get a lot of comments about that, and a lot of YouTubes are made because of the flight attendants, people with their cell phones on airplanes today, taking pictures of what goes on. And even if it's a tragedy now, people with cell phones are able to record that, and we're able to get instant news whenever we have something that happens that the public can review that on YouTube or however it's delivered. But the flight attendants at Southwest, it sounds like they have a lot of fun. And I think it would be fun to fly for an airline like that. And if I were starting another airline again, or another, I started one years ago, and of course it's out of business now. But at any rate, I think I would start with the philosophy of Southwest and Herb Keller that started that airline. Let's have fun, folks. Let's dress fun. Let's have fun. Let's talk fun. Let's treat the passengers as if they're also going to have fun with us. And by golly, Southwest over the years have always made a very good profit for its shareholders. And again, for 2014, it earned that carrier the highest earnings of any of the other airlines. Profitability, I'm talking about. That's about all we have, but any discussion from any of our hosts or any of our listeners, I'm going to open all of the microphones, find out what you guys are cooking, because sometimes we hear pots and pans rattling, or what you're drinking. Sometimes we hear ice in the glass, and sometimes it comes from our own ice in the glass. whatever you want to make a comment about, I'm going to open all the microphones. And so, by golly,
It's open-air microphone time right now before we sign off. So say whatever you want to say and be done with it, because we'll end our show in about when we run out of conversation, I guess.
Neil, this is Jill.
Jill,
and
go ahead.
There has been great discussion on the Internet or on Facebook from a group, stewardess from the 60s and 70s, about all these new pre-flight announcements. And we have giggled and laughed. We've seen more videos. And we all say, all us old-timers say, if we had ever gotten caught doing that, we would have lost our jobs.
Yeah.
And but we enjoy them so much, because we know exactly, you know, if we had had the freedom to do that, we probably would have done it more.
Absolutely, absolutely. And some of our captains who had the monopoly, I would say, of the cabin announcement and the senior flight attendant, but sometimes we gave a little travelogue as we flew along, and we described the Grand Canyon or Yosemite or the Grand Tetons or the Chesapeake Bay or wherever we were flying. We like to entertain our passengers with that type of conversation. But now the flight attendants are really making this an improv comedy hour, if you will. And by golly, I think people are having fun with it. What do you guys think?
Well, I know for sure that Southwest is number one in doing it. I know that if you get to see some of the Air New Zealand, and I say ads, they probably are on YouTube. You can find those, and they're just almost as good as Southwestern. And there's another one that's done by a little girl on an airplane, and it's a British one that is just absolutely hysterical. So they're out there. You just got to look for them, folks.
Anyone flown with another carrier besides Eastern? Of course, you couldn't have flown with Eastern. But any other carriers that you can give us your experience?
I had an experience on JetBlue recently, which was really good, Neil. Everything was on time, and the crew did a good job. And I just want to leave you with this little tone. That's my martini getting ready to swallow.
Just don't fall down the steps, Jim. We need you in future shows.
Yes, sir.
But, hey, I had a good time tonight. I hope you did, too. And as
yeah.
Lawrence Welk would say, we had a good time, too. I think he said that, Lawrence Welk. But at any rate, Lawrence Welk came up with this little rendering, and he had a little tune that he signed off all of his shows. Sounded something like this. Well, Bill, that's all the time we have for tonight's show. How about putting episode 202 into the radio show's archive files?
Certainly, Neil. Well, that's our show for tonight, folks. We'll be back with you next week, same time and same station. The EALRadioshow.com, no dope, www necessary. And like one of our popular commercials for Eastern, we have to earn our wings every day. We hope we are doing so here at the EAL Radio Show. Next week, we hope you'll once again fly Eastern Radio as we bring you more Eastern news, history, and talk with former Eastern employees and friends of Eastern. Be sure to tune in and call in at 7 p.m. when Flight 203 departs the gate for a new adventure. Be on board for the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. From all the gang here at our studio and remote locations, we all say good night.
Good night.
Good night.
And happy New Year.
Good night,
family.
And happy New Year.
See you next week.
Good night.